Stay with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Sulis. Interested in learning new skills online at a pace that suits you? Visit ecollege.ie to apply for one of our free online courses.
Now, I'm joined in the studio this morning by Minister for Finance, Pascal Donoghue, and you're very welcome. Let's talk about the tech companies first, because we've always heard a lot, haven't we, about their commitment to Ireland, how they've made Ireland their home, the likes of Twitter and Facebook and Amazon. But then when we see over the last 2 weeks how the job losses have been announced and how they've been handled, does that give you pause for thought about how committed they really are to this country?
I believe many of them, if not all of them indeed, are still highly committed to our country. And the reason why I make that case is the change that you're referring to is not Ireland specific. It's global change that these very large companies are experiencing. And I think in the round, if you look at the tech sector, even with the redundancies that are coming, and I really feel and acknowledge how difficult it is for those who will be affected by it and the difficult weeks they're going through, even when those job losses happen, you'll still see a tech sector in Ireland that's far bigger than it was a few years ago, mm-hmm. with lots of new companies developing as well. And this moment of change is something I was anticipating, and it is something the government has been planning for.
We'll talk about what you've said about that in the past, but just when it comes to how those announcements were handled, I mean, there are people in Twitter who, I'm sure you know, were locked out of their systems, told not to come into the office. That's not how you would want to see people being treated.
It's appalling. And there are other companies that look to handle very difficult moments a lot better. These are always incredibly demanding moments for those who are affected by the loss of a job, and they should be handled with compassion and they should be handled with clarity. And certainly the way in which it was handled in one company, it falls very far short of that. I'd have to acknowledge that other companies are making a real genuine attempt to handle these difficult moments better.
Has the Irish government made that known to Twitter?
Well, I'm sure there has been engagement between the IDA and the Department of Enterprise with different companies, reminding them and making clear what their legal obligations are. Am I aware of the specifics of it? I'll be honest and say I'm not, because that's handled elsewhere within government. But I know that all employers are reminded of their legal obligations at these difficult moments. And in fairness, we have other companies that, of course, I wish didn't have the need to do this at all, but have looked to fulfil the obligations they have to those who work for them.
You touched on the strength of the tech sector there, and I was reading from a recent speech that you gave where you talked about linking inward investment to Indigenous entrepreneurs. And I wonder, is that an acceptance that it's just too high risk now for us to rely so much on multinationals?
I was also making the point that in other parts of our economy, this is a link that is growing and is going well for us. If I look at the innovation that is happening in life sciences, in medical devices, in food and drink, what I'm now seeing happening is the very significant development of a group of Irish small and medium-sized businesses that have benefited from larger companies being present in Ireland. And even from a tech point of view as well, you know, I am blown away by the scale of tech entrepreneurship that we have here in Ireland. So it is a link that I've long been aware of that we need to strengthen. I see some encouraging signs, and it is even my hope that those who very regrettably are losing their jobs at the moment, that we can engage with them to encourage them to set up their own businesses here in Ireland.
So rather than welcoming the big guys from overseas, we start creating the big guys here. Is that the aim?
We've already been doing that. If you look at companies like Ryanair, Glanbia, CRH, these are all companies, and I'm just picking out those because they're in different parts of our economy, that mainly due to their excellence and to their entrepreneurship and the quality of what they are offering, they have scaled up so quickly over the last decade to become not just Irish companies, but global and European presences. Yeah. So that trend is already underway. But we have in Enterprise Ireland, in, for example, their high performance startup unit, a programme that's one of the best of its kind in the world, that has been making progress on this priority now for many years.
Okay. Something else you said, that you're saying another recession is a risk and the domestic economy could suffer due to its large exposure to the technology sector. Can you give us a timeline on when you believe that risk will be most acute?
Well, we've already recognised this in our budget planning for 2023. So we're expecting that our globe, that the Irish economy for next year will grow between 1% and 1.5%. which will be the lowest level of growth that we've had for many years, but still a level of growth, and still a level of growth that is consistent with a really high level of employment in Ireland, with a record number of people at work. So in terms of when I think that risk could materialise, it's across next year. We've planned for it, we've budgeted for it, and we will just have to monitor month by month any indication of that vulnerability developing in our economy.
Does it matter if we're technically in a recession or not? Because people already feel like we are, they're behaving like we are in many cases.
Well, of course, I would prefer that we weren't in any kind of recession. And just to emphasise the point again, that what we are projecting and forecasting for next year is a lower level of growth rather than the experience of an actual recession. But Claire, beyond that, I very much do take your point. From meeting my constituents, from work I do across the country, meeting businesses, I was at a Chamber of Commerce event in Mullingar at the end of last week, and I saw two things. I saw amazing locally owned businesses working so hard, doing so well in challenging circumstances, maintaining their commitments to their employees. But I also saw, and see this all of the time, for the same businesses, the same people who are present, that it's tough, prices are going up, living standards are being impacted due to this, which is why in turn we did what we could in the budget to offer support at this difficult time.
But those businesses, and I'm sure they explained to you that they're really crippled under the weight of the utility bills.
Sure.
I know the temporary business energy support scheme is there, and rising costs in general. I mean, how concerned are you that we're going to see a raft of closures because of that? We're already seeing it, particularly in the hospitality industry.
So the reality and the truth is, as you've already said, is that we are seeing businesses that are being affected by this. We did go through a number of years during the dark, dark moments of COVID in which we had a very, very low level of insolvency due to the magnitude of support that was in place from the government. And we are, and it's really sad, and it's really difficult for those businesses, for the people who've created for them, for the people who's working in them, we are seeing closures taking place. However, we're also seeing new businesses open up as well. We're seeing many businesses thirsty and eager to try and find new staff. And the reason why we're bringing forward the temporary business energy support scheme that will be open shortly, that we estimate we will spend around 1.2 billion euro of your listeners' money, is to help these businesses between now and February to give them every chance of continuing to be viable and successful.
Has that scheme been approved by Brussels?
We're in the final phases of getting agreement to it, and I'm confident we will have it open in line with what I said on Budget Day, which is in a few weeks' time, if not sooner.
Do you think it's going to be enough?
I do believe it's going to be enough. What that scheme will do is that if your unit energy cost goes up by more than 50% versus the same billing period a year ago, the state will pay 40% of the share of your higher bill, in other words, the increase of the bill. So we do believe it's going to offer help and will offer support at a difficult time, because I have to, again, be open and honest and say that I can't cover all of the costs. I can't cover all of the cost of the increased bills without creating other big risks for our country. But I would just emphasise what I have said at the other points in other schemes that we set up, that we have to monitor it and we have to evaluate it and see what impact it has.
So you are open to maybe expanding that, because we hear all the time here from businesses who are telling us, yes, it's going to help to a certain extent, but it's not going to come close to solving the problem.
So just in the interest of creating accurate expectations regarding what the government can do, at the moment, we have no plans to change the scheme. We will monitor it. The reason why I'm not going to give a commitment to you this morning regarding any change in the future, there's two brief reasons why. First, we haven't even opened the scheme. No business is on it yet, but that's going to happen very, very shortly. And then it will be making payments available from energy costs from the 1st of September. But secondly, and critically, when we were during the 2 years of COVID and I was launching schemes regularly to try to support our economy, at each point when I was launching these schemes, I was always told then that I needed to do more. But by trying to get the balance right between doing enough to help to make a difference, it turned out we were able to fund those schemes for longer, and we were able to offer certainty and help for longer. And I want to get that balance right. I know and I accept that you will have listeners this morning who are running shops, running cafes, running restaurants, running SMEs, worried about their future. But I want to be confident that what we launch we can afford, because between now and the end of February, it'll be 1.2 billion euro alone.
Yeah, so just when it comes to hospitality, you mentioned cafes there, but yesterday we had Heineken announcing that increase in the price of a keg of beer, and one Dublin publican saying this madness has to stop because they just can't ask people for 6 euro a pint in this economy. Are you particularly concerned about that sector?
Well, this is the reason why I didn't put up excise on drink within our economy.
Because you expected these rises to come?
No, I didn't expect it. What I did expect was general cost price increases. I didn't have any particular insight into what was going to happen to Heineken or other companies like them. But I did expect general price increases, and I did expect them to have a significant impact on our hospitality sector. And it is the reason why over recent budgets we have not changed excise and alcohol. Because of an anticipation that we could get to a moment like this that could make it even harder, for example, for our pubs, which over the last number of years have had to make huge, difficult decisions not to open for health grounds. They're now facing this, and they are significant and important employers across our country.
You see, they're already paying extra, of course, for their energy. Now they're looking at paying extra for their beer and having to ask their customers for more. I mean, do you think that punters will be able to bear pints at, well, already over 6 euro in some cases, but way over that now, given this increase?
So I'm no doubt at all. It will just be a further pressure on a tough December and tough November when people are already feeling the pinch and feeling the difficulty with the cost of living. But this is the reason why we're making the 200 euro energy support payments available. It's the reason why we're making the additional child benefit payments. It's the reason why we're making the double payments available to those who are social and welfare, just in anticipation of these challenging moments. But just to go back to the early part of your interview, you know, you were asking me the really important question about the sustainability of our economy and our public finances when we see these big changes taking place in the global economy and in jobs. And what I need to do and what the government needs to do is join those dots together and pull those threads together to ensure that what we're doing at the moment we can continue to afford, even if we do see big changes take place.
Yeah, you must be very jittery, though, when you see what's happening with the global economy and you're relying on these 10 companies, interchangeable, but the 10 companies paying 53% of our corporation tax.
But I've been recognising this risk now over many, many years. And it is why, in particular, since 2019, when our corporate tax receipts have gone up by so much. And just to put this in context, in 2019, they stood at around 10 billion euro. We estimate for this year there will be over 20 billion euro. And as those corporate tax receipts have gone up, the government, myself, Minister Michael McGrath, did not transfer those higher corporate tax receipts into permanent spending or permanent tax reductions.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And that is the reason why we had last month a surplus of 7 billion euro in anticipation of these moments happening.
But it's the potential volatility of that income source that's
problematic,
isn't it?
But the best safeguard against that volatility, which I've long acknowledged, the figures that you're referring to, I've published and my department has published and we've made the case for. But this is the reason why we're putting 2 billion euro into a national reserve fund. It's the reason why we're putting 4 billion euro into a national reserve fund. And it's the reason why, even in the face of the real hardship and real difficulty that I know many of your listeners are experiencing at the moment, the government has made the case for running a budget surplus.
Yes, and you did those one-off payments so that they would be one-off expenditure for government and that you wouldn't be adding to permanent spending. But you may have to do that again, would you imagine, come March or earlier next year?
We'll just have to evaluate where we stand at that point. And we are expecting inflation to begin to decrease from the high levels of increase this year. But we will have to evaluate in the second quarter where we are with changes in our economy, and if and what kind of support is needed. But I think there is an important parallel again to draw between where we are now and where we were during COVID. During COVID, we had so many schemes in place, like the pandemic unemployment payment, like the employment wage subsidy scheme. Schemes like that, which we invested over 38 billion euro of your listeners' money into. And I remember being in this studio and elsewhere and you making the point to me, how will we ever be able to change these or get out of them? And we did, when the economic circumstances allowed us to do it. They're gone now. And I do believe we'll get to a similar point for the changes and payments we have in place at the moment. But I equally believe we need to be open and clear about them being temporary payments.
Let's talk a little bit about politics. You're one of only two ministers so far who know for certain which portfolio you will have after this reshuffle on the 17th of December. There's been a lot of political capital used around retaining the Eurogroup role that you currently have. Have you found the focus on that to be slightly embarrassing?
So firstly, I have not kept the role. I just announced my candidacy for it on Monday. Have I found it embarrassing? Has it been a distraction in any way? No. My job has, it's all consuming, all occupying. And I am making the case now for the retention of the Eurogroup presidency on the basis of what I have delivered when I've had that role over the last number of years.
Mountains have been moved in order to keep you potentially in that gig.
It is a very important role. So if you look at it from an Irish point of view, we are an open trading economy. Our stability, our progress depends on the stability and safety and growth of the euro. And I have the incredible privilege and the humbling responsibility of being the chair of the group of finance ministers whose job it is to deliver that. So if you look at what matters to our ability to export, to deliver safety in our public finances, so much of it depends on the euro and the future of the euro. And to be in a role that allows me to contribute to that and to work respectfully and intensely with all my other colleagues who are finance ministers who are also in the euro is an important office.
But you won't be finance minister after Christmas.
If I have the privilege of my colleagues reappointing me in early December, I won't
be. So you shouldn't really be on the Eurogroup at all.
Well, what we have been doing is making the case on the basis of precedent for there being an Irish finance minister who will fully represent the national interest of Ireland and for me to act as chairperson of the Eurogroup. There are precedents for that. There's a number of precedents for it.
For two representatives from one country to be on the Eurogroup.
So that has happened, for example, when Luxembourg had the presidency of the Eurogroup. But this is what my colleagues have to evaluate and this is what they have to weigh up. Mm-hmm. And I'm making the case on the basis of the commitments that I made to them in 2020 and how I have delivered against those commitments. And other governments, finance ministers and their prime ministers will evaluate the case and will make a decision on the matter in early December.
There's been a lot of speculation as to what your intentions are for your own career. Can you give a commitment that you'll remain on as a government minister for the duration of this term?
Yes.
You've no plans. How do you feel about that intense speculation that you're on the way out the door?
If you look at all the issues that you've raised with me in the interview, they are the things that preoccupy me. I am far more worried and far more concerned about the jobs of all the people that we have discussed, about their living standards, the effect on their economy on them, than I am about anything in relation to me. And that's the truth. I work morning, noon and night to deliver against the office that I'm privileged to hold.
Why do you think it is that it has been up for public discussion that you might be heading off?
I think it's because I was the first Irish person to hold the role of president of the Eurogroup. I think it's understandable when something like that happens, it can lead to some speculation. But this is speculation that occupies none of my attention. All of my hours, all of my time are focused against delivering against the needs that you've been correctly raising with me.
You will have heard the Taoiseach saying on the Irish Independent podcast that your party and Fianna Fáil could have won more votes if supporters had been encouraged to transfer and that perhaps should happen in the next election. Was he right to say that?
He was acknowledging the reality that if the current parties that are in government had been more effective at votes being transferred between each other at the last election, either of us could have won seats in some constituencies. But as the Taoiseach went on to say and has acknowledged, you know, the next general election is still some way away. All of our focus is on delivering a good government for the country. We have so much to do.
Clearly not, because he said that it should be considered for the next election. So part of his focus is on what's going to happen then.
And it's up to each political party then to form a view in relation to what they want to do at that election point. I believe this is a government that it's doing its best in very trying and very difficult circumstances that our country is feeling at the moment.
Let me ask you another way. Would you like...
If I can just very quickly finish off, Claire. We have so many things that are happening around our country for reasons that are beyond the control of any government. And in those circumstances, the government, I believe, it's doing its best to effectively serve our country. And at election time, the different political parties will make a case regarding
their
future.
Do you want to see Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael enter a voting pact in the next election?
I think we are 2 years away at least from an election.
How would you feel about asking constituents where you live to transfer or to give their second preference to Mary Fitzpatrick, for example?
It's far too early and I've no views in relation to that. I haven't given it a second's thought. I believe by the time we get to an election, each party will make the case for the contribution they've made to government. Fine Gael, Fianna Fáil, the Green Party are very different political parties with different traditions. And I believe what we have tried to do is bring the best of those traditions together to offer something that's greater than the sum of our parts in government. But we have so much more we need to do. We need to get our country through the huge challenge that we're in with the cost of living. We need to build more homes. Brexit is unfinished. We have to deal with the consequences of the war on the people of Ukraine. That's all we're doing.
So today, KBC and Ulster Bank are closing some accounts. They're starting that process, aren't they? And only 38% of people who have accounts with those banks were closed by the end of October. Have you been in touch with those banks this week to make sure that nobody is left without a banking facility?
So the Central Bank and the Department of Finance have been in ongoing and regular contact and weekly contact with the banks since these announcements were made. You're right, the figures that you refer to show a low level of account closure in the departing banks. On the other hand, in the three remaining and large banks that we have, over 800,000 accounts have now been opened over the last number of months. So we're seeing lots of new accounts that are being opened elsewhere at the moment. It may be the case that in the accounts in the banks that are leaving, that are not closed, the growing share of them are no longer active. And we will be monitoring through the central bank this on a regular basis.
Are you concerned about people, though, who may have to change banks and lose a credit facility or an overdraft? Consumers who will be in a very difficult situation in the next couple of months.
But we've recognised this has been an issue since the very moment the regrettable decision was made by both banks. And this is why, you know, on the airways of RTE alone, for many months now, advertising campaigns have been run, reminding customers of the banks that are leaving about what they need to do. And it's also the reason why the central bank will be continuing to put the departing banks under a high level of scrutiny to ensure that any customer of theirs is given every opportunity and every bit of information to change account.
Okay, I want to ask you very briefly about the World Cup. I know you're a soccer fan, but people are conflicted about the World Cup starting next week in Qatar because of the litany of human rights abuses that we hear from that country. Will you be watching it?
Yes, I will. I'm a huge sports fan and I can't say a word about sports without congratulating Munster on their unbelievable achievement last night. And what a great night for Irish rugby that was. But I will be watching it. And the reason why I'll be watching it is I believe and wish that the World Cup was not taking place in Qatar. I really do. I wish it was taking place in another part of the world for the reasons you've just referred to. But sport reminds me of what we have in common. And on the sporting pitch, and in particular in the World Cup, you see those moments of joy and sporting beauty that remind us of what we have in common. And I'll be watching the World Cup because I am a fan of soccer, of sport, and because when I see great countries compete on the pitch, two things happen to me. One, I wish to God Ireland were there, and I can't wait to see us in the Rugby World Cup and the Women's World Cup next year. But secondly, you're reminded of how sport can unite.
Yeah,
and that unity is what matters at moments of division.
Ireland won't be there, but the Ireland manager, Stephen Kenny, will be there. And he was asked about his decision to go because, as you know, he's a very strong track record in social issues. And he said, am I that significant that by my going, I'm going to influence anything? Probably not. Do you think it's right for him to be there?
If Stephen Kenny believes it's useful in his role as the manager of our football team and with the sporting responsibilities that he has to be there, then I think that's the right call. He is a man of great standing on these issues and a man of very high values on issues like this and the way he has treated people.
Okay.
But I just go back to acknowledging and wishing it wasn't happening where it is, but sport is about what brings us together.
Okay.
And at a time in which the world is divided with such difficulty and such challenges, seeing teams compete against each other fairly is, I think, but a special moment.
You've been very clear about your feelings on Qatar in your answer just then, and yet we do millions of euro worth of business with that country.
Indeed we do. And we do trade with many parts of the world in which we have differences in relation to human values and human rights. But there is a link between that and the point I made on sport, that I believe in a very different way, trade and commerce can bring people together and allow different cultures to see each other in action. And there are few greater forces for changing behaviours that I believe are unacceptable than bringing cultures together and different nationalities having an opportunity to engage with each other. And trade in a really different way to sport can also play a very small role by bringing cultures together and allowing humans to make contact with each other in dealing with the prejudices that I want to see gone from our world.
Minister, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you, Claire.
Studio.